Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Spotlight On. Today, it's Mr. Charlie Curtis, someone I've known for almost 20 years. And, right, it's been about 20 years, give or take.
Yep.
And he's really an interesting practitioner with a lot of things. So the first question I always ask people on our Spotlight is, what brought you into the world of hypnosis and NLP? And you know, just tell us a little bit about your journey into this.
Well, I've always been interested in ever since my first year of college, when I was introduced to the psycho-cybernetic system, which actually is a form of self-hypnosis. And so ever since that point, I've been into motivation, high performance. I've always been interested in fitness and sports and all of that. And it all just kind of fit together. And of course, sports psychology has come a long way since that time period. But I got very interested in Kenneth Cooper and his aerobics. And I was interested in bodybuilding way back then. Did a lot of running, a lot of cycling. So that got me into the whole idea of what can I achieve and how can I use my mind to achieve it better. And so then I did a lot of different things in life, had a bunch of different jobs, began to specialize in electronics, computer programming, and all of that. And all of those are areas where high performance is a job requirement. You have to be able to deliver day after day, and it's a stressful environment. So I then began to tune into another aspect of the altered state, and that is that you can use it to relieve stress. And at that point, one of the vice presidents where I had a job said, I noticed that you're really good at handling this better than other employees. Could you teach them some of the things that you know? So that was actually the first corporate training that I gave. It was for the company that I worked in. And so that worked out real well. And at that point, I was getting into Tony Robbins, and he was talking up NLP. And I went up to Omega up in upstate New York, where they have that all those courses every year on different aspects of healthy living. And I found a whole shelf of books on NLP, Milton Erickson, and the Bandler and Grinder guys and everything else associated with that. So I bought the whole shelf and I spent all my free time that week reading that. I got so into it that when I was driving home, I was reading Frogs into Princes about the 5-minute phobia cure. I had to stop the car about every 10 miles and read another couple pages. I was just so excited by what I was reading. And that was about the same time that people started coming to me and saying, can you work with me one-on-one? And I said, well, I don't have training for that. Well, can you do it anyway? So that was the time period when I went and got certified by NGH so that I could say, yeah, I have a certificate that says I can work with somebody one-on-one. Started doing that. And it wasn't too long after that that I bumped into you and said, okay, I want to take this NLP stuff. I was actually going to take it from George Bien, but he couldn't make it, and you turned up and did his training for him.
Philadelphia.
Yeah. It was in Philadelphia. So, so it's just been a very fascinating journey ever since then. I've gotten more and more involved in the NLP, become a trainer, trainer's training, all that good stuff.
Oh, okay. And tell us a little bit about your journey with meditation, because that's one of your big, it's going to tie into what we're going to talk about later, but how you got into it and going to India and all that cool stuff.
Well, I actually dropped out of graduate school because I was getting all stressed out. I was a PhD candidate for a chemistry degree and just wasn't having any fun. And tried traditional psychotherapy, and that didn't work. All they wanted to do was give me Valium, and all that did was knock me on my butt. So that ended up in the toilet. And so I just said, I need something better. And I saw this advertisement for a meditation course, and I went and took it. And I said, I like this. I like this a lot. I ended up quitting graduate school and living in the ashram environment for 2 years. And that completely changed everything, turned my world upside down. But it hooked me into the fact that you can not only do a relaxation, stress reduction process, but that you can do it as part of a lifestyle. And then when you do that, it just really makes life much more fun. And so what I've been doing since then is expanding the mindfulness so that it goes into all parts of my professional life, and then developing new techniques for people to use that fit within what we do with NLP and hypnosis. And so that's how I developed the mindful journaling process that I was talking to you about.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because I know you have a broad-based knowledge and you bring in a lot of interesting concepts and theoretical orientations, if you will, into what we do. It's one of the reasons when I was doing the master practitioner NLP training at the Guild for a little over 10 years, you would always come in on one of the days and teach a couple hours, teach the morning. And I was always so impressed. As you know, I sit in the class and do the exercise because you're teaching something I don't know. You know, and I always wonder why sometimes in our field people get beat up to themselves when they don't know something. But you don't know what you don't know. Why would I know it? It's, you know, it hasn't come across my radar yet. Or I may know of it, but I've never went and took a class or really experienced it. And one of the things I always liked when you teach is you always do, you give some of the theoretical, you give some of the background, you give some of how it works, and then you actually do it, which I think, much like you and working in the center you're in now, is that's a little bit missing in the really clinically, didactically trained people. They don't always jump in and do it. They're so busy talking about it. So tell us about your little the practice that you're working in now, and because you were telling me before, it's different than a lot of the standalone hypnotists deal with. So just tell us a little bit about it, how it got started, and what you're doing with it.
Well, it's actually a clinical counseling center. It takes clients who are being paid for by insurance. They've gotten diagnosed by someone else somewhere along the way, and then they wind up coming through our door because we have a niche practice. We work with people with chronic pain and things that develop from that, sexual issues, relationship problems. So pretty severe problems paid for by insurance. And one of the way that I fit in is that, as you know, hypnosis and NLP can do a lot of things that standard psychotherapy can't get to, because some of these things are just so rooted at the subconscious level that talk therapy can't get there or can't do it efficiently. So I've ended up being the go-to person for people who needed a subconscious level process. So I get a lot of referrals from people in the practice. We have about eight therapists now. So they send me people to me for what I call emotional spot removal. In other words, the person has a sleep issue. They just can't go to sleep, or they need to quit smoking, or they just have pain and the traditional pain techniques that they're working with aren't working. So we do something subconsciously and are able to get a result. And I was just talking to the clinical director a few days ago, and she was saying, we're getting a reputation for solving problems that other practices of this nature can't solve. And so she was saying that it means she's getting a lot more referrals on a regular basis. She was really happy about that. And, you know, so I have to credit all of the good trainings that I had, including yours, for giving me the skill set to be able to take these difficult clients and help them feel better.
Cool. Yeah, as a psychologist myself, it's always been frustrating that I don't see the hypnosis, the NLP, incorporated into more traditional clinical settings, especially with people with dual diagnosis, whether it's dual diagnosis mental illness. But one of the things I've been doing a lot was dual diagnosis with a mental issue and an addiction, because then you got to unpack, is it the mental issue you got to fix first, or is it the addiction? Or once you get the addiction out, then the mental issue, whatever it happens to be, then we really see it. Then we have to work with it, you know. And so yeah, I wish we would see more of that. So, you know, and the way it's going to happen is what you're doing. You know, there's one person has a clinic like that out in California. He said he should have named it the Clinic of Last Resort, because he's getting all the referrals from the psychiatrist and the psychologists and social workers that I can't do anything with this person here. Go to this guy. And, you know, and he's, I think we're going to see more of that. Go ahead.
One of the things I agree with is Herbert Benson's contention that medicine should be a three-legged stool, and that the third leg should be the mind-body connection, and that we should start with it right away, not wait until the person's been going to doctors for 5 years and nothing worked before we say, oh, could there be a component in the mind? And of course, there always is.
Right. And well, I'm seeing it on the clinical side in the psych world, which I'm involved with a little bit, with mindfulness exploding. It's like they'll accept mindfulness, but not all of them. They'll accept mindfulness pretty easily. They will somewhat accept hypnosis pretty easily. NLP is basically verboten, you know, unless you've been a psychologist for 20 years and you're pretty burned out. You just want to do what works. So it's always interesting, but you're into mindfulness. How did you get, I know it comes from meditation, but how did you get into mindfulness?
Well, because I had that experience in the ashram, which was back in the 70s. So I guess I'm dating myself. But I just found that to be a rock of Gibraltar. It just helped me get back to a stable place every day where I wasn't freaking out. I wasn't stressing out. I wasn't doing bad things to my body because I was in a place, I was getting into that relaxation response every day for at least a while. And, you know, in the computer business, which I was in, there can be a lot of stress. We were working with hospitals and hospitals where you have 200 people pounding on the system right now. And something goes wrong, and now all those 200 people are on the phone to us complaining. You know, that can get pretty stressful, trying to sort all that out, get everything back in order, fix the errors. You know, so I learned how to do this in self-defense. And then I learned how to do it with other people, and that's where I went through your training, the guild training, etc. But then I really got into the idea of how can we take this whole thing and make it so evidence-based, make it all fit together, so that it's a seamless package. So the person that comes from the traditional psychotherapy world and is used to that evidence-based framework can look at what we do and say, yes, yeah, the same thing. It's maybe a part of it I haven't looked at, but the evidence is there. So for the past 10 years, I've actually been teaching a class for medical and mental health people that shows them, here's the evidence, here's what we can do, here's what you can do, and teaching them 48 weeks worth of techniques that by the end of it, they have a whole set of tools in their toolbox that they didn't have before. They have the hypnosis, both the regular and the Ericksonian. They have the mindfulness, 8 weeks of that standard, 8-week training. And then they have the basic and advanced NLP. And then now I'm adding EFT into that because that's such an important part of the mix. But when I saw mindfulness exploding in terms of people becoming aware of it, and Jon Kabat-Zinn did a terrific job of telling people in the medical community, hey, there's something going on here you need to pay attention to. So that took off. And then about 15 years ago, three mental health people said, you know what, I bet you this would work in mental health as well. We can do more with it than just pain control. And they wrote the book, Segal, Williams, and Teasdale wrote the book on how to do it for depression. And that was the first time it had been applied. Well, actually, Marsha Linehan had done it for, you know, borderlines and other and suicidal people with her dialectical behavior therapy. But the first time this was applied in a mainstream way to a CBT context was these guys. And so they managed to find, after going over a couple of speed bumps, they managed to figure it all out and come up with a format that really worked. And just about at that point, it just began to catch fire. And everybody said, well, let's apply it to every kind of mental health context, not just depression. So at this point, the number of studies are going wild. The book catalogs are just full of mindfulness books. Everybody's finding that when you add mindfulness to it, it's better. Well, the reason it's better is because it's similar to therapeutic hypnosis. It puts you in that relaxation response, that open space, where you can learn how to reprogram those neural pathways to live life in a more peaceful, more healthful, a more effective way. So I decided to incorporate that standard 8-week training format into what I was doing. So the people who were coming for NLP and hypnosis would also be getting the 8 weeks of mindfulness and a certificate that would allow them to go out and teach the public, professionals, groups, and individuals how to do this, because I just knew there was going to be a big market for this. And of course, that market is now coming to fruition with it's going nuts on the internet. Some of these apps on the phones have 40 million downloads. You know, people are finding, hey, I like to click on this thing and it helps me relax. So, so as part of what I'm doing, I'm always trying to develop new techniques. And I got the idea a while ago. I've always been a journaling junkie. Even before I get into all of this, I love journaling. I loved how it made me feel. I used to teach artist way groups. I made a presentation years ago at the National Guild on 8 steps that we go through every time we recover from a stress, and that you can journal your way through those 8 steps and learn, and then connect it. I showed how to integrate that with NLP. And so then I said, how can I bring the mindfulness into this? Because one of the problems with journaling is most people use it in a cathartic way. They just sit there and write while they're upset, and they get the feelings out. And that's okay, but it can be intense. But there are also incredible health benefits. There's a fellow, James Pennebaker, who showed that if you journaled as little as 4 days, 15 minutes per day, that 6 months later, the health benefits, you could still measure them, which is absolutely amazing when you think about it. And that's been replicated over 300 times because nobody else could believe it either. So they had to prove it wrong. And instead, they proved it right. And so what it means, and you know this from the field of addictions, when people keep their secrets to themselves, it makes them sick. And so getting rid of your secrets, opening up and getting rid of your secrets is a key to health. It actually unlocks the healing process in the body. So my objective, do you want me to keep talking about the technique now? Or?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Cool.
So I thought, all right, so how can I bring mindfulness into this process of cathartic journaling? Because I know cathartic journaling works, but I know it can be intense and not everybody's up for an intense process. They really like mindfulness because it makes them feel that very peaceful way. How can we use this peaceful state in journaling? So I asked my subconscious mind, and as happens so often, I woke up one day with this whole process in my head. It just delivered the whole model to me. And I started experimenting with it and writing scripts for it and trying it out on a few people I know to see what they liked, what they didn't like. And so what I came up with is the fact that journaling, if you take traditional mindfulness and look at it, to me, there's 3 levels. The first level is you say, okay, I'm supposed to be mindful of what's going on while my life sucks, so I don't like being mindful, therefore I don't like mindfulness, I'm going to quit. A lot of people just get that far. I call that level 1 mindfulness. It's just being mindful of the fact that your life is currently miserable. Level 2 mindfulness is when you break through that to the relaxation response. And so you, as we say in NLP, you go meta on your miserableness, and all of a sudden,
I think we locked up.
No.
Feel miserable anymore. Notice what you're noticing. Then you get into that peaceful place. You go meta and everything is good. And then there's a 3rd level that not everyone gets to. If you go deep enough in meditation, it'll open the door to a spiritual experience. And I've had a number of those, and they're very good. But so the main thing I'm focusing on is how can we use this level 2? If we can get people into level 2 mindfulness, the relaxation response, how can we use that to give them a journaling experience that'll be very efficient for them? And so I came up with the model that if I quickly induce mindfulness, and I find mindfulness to be a beautiful induction, in 2 minutes, I can have somebody in somnambulism using mindfulness as the induction. And so what I'll do is I'll get them into that state experience to have some perspective on it, and I'll have them journal from there. And so what I found out through experimentation is if they journal just a single word or a short phrase, that releases the whole thing from their subconscious mind, at least for the moment, and all of a sudden they feel at peace. So if they were doing cathartic journaling, the normal kind, they might start writing in their notebook and saying something like, you know, I can't believe they did that. I really feel bad. I'm upset. I just can't get over this stuff. They wounded me. They hurt me. They made me feel bad. And I wonder if people are believing what they're saying about me and thinking things about me that aren't true. You can go into mindfulness and you can journal all that with the word, I feel bad, that little short phrase, I feel bad, and it'll release just on the basis of that. So then you go to the next thing in your consciousness. It's like those things in the restaurant where they have all the plates stacked and you pull the top plate off and then the plate stack moves up a little bit. I have them just have one word or short phrase for all of the issues that are going on for them. And in about 13 minutes, all of those issues have been cleared. They have switched polarity. They have gone to a lighter, higher vibration. And now all of a sudden they're open to their goals and dreams. Because that process that I was talking about, when people recover from stress, they go through 8 steps. And the 8 steps they go through are, first of all, they notice that they feel bad. Then they have to notice and get rid of their emotional stress. Then they have to notice and get rid of their physical stress. And only then can they get back in touch with the feeling of life is good. So now that you're back in touch, you're basically grounded to life, it can be a good experience and things can be okay. Now you can once again access your goals and dreams And from them come your plans, and from them come your action steps. And then from that comes the call to action right now in this moment. And when I showed, when I developed that model, was you can do all of those eight steps in the space of a single breath. You can be doing something, you can get frustrated, you can stop for a second and go, ugh. Your whole body relaxes, and all of a sudden you're ready to move on again. And in that second, you went through all those eight steps. Whereas you have somebody that, for example, had a big loss, they're going through a grieving process, for example, and those eight steps can stretch out and be very identifiable, for example, to a grief counselor who's helping them through the process. So what this mindful journaling does is it takes them through this without mentioning that it's doing so, simply by releasing the emotional and physical stress that's going on through this releasing process. And I've had people go through this and release symptoms. They came feeling sick, and they, by the time they were done with the process, they didn't feel sick anymore. I've had that happen to myself. You know, there were a couple times this winter where I momentarily felt I was catching a cold, and I went through a polarity shift. My immune system activated, and within 10 minutes, it was all gone and nothing ever happened. So this stuff can really get results, and it can get it fast. So once they've released the topic and gone to the peaceful place, let go of the issue, and activated their goals and dreams, now they can come out of this whole process feeling highly optimistic and excited about life and basically back in action. You could think of it as the internet, they were offline because of all their stress. And by the end of it, it's like they're online again with their life, online with their goals and dreams.
Oh, cool. Cool. All right. So are you going to walk us through a demo?
Okay. So I'm not going to do the whole journaling part, but I'm going to walk you through the mental space of the process just so that you can get a sense of it. You know, first of all, I'm going to model it by journaling in my mind out loud. And one thing I did find was that you can do this journaling without the pencil and paper. You can do it in your head. So I'm going to pretend that I'm stressed out, and I'm going to go through the journaling process. So I'm going to relax my body. And I'm going to get conscious of my breath. And as I get conscious of my breathing, I can already feel myself beginning to become less aroused physiologically. So I'm coming out of that overactive sympathetic nervous system response. I'm beginning to move down. And so I'm beginning now to be conscious of my breath. And so I'm going to take a minute and just watch my breathing as it moves in and as it moves out. And as that's happening, I can feel myself moving down into a peaceful place. And because I have some experience with journaling, my mind knows just where to go. It goes to a place where life feels good. And so because I'm going to pretend that I was stressed,
I think we locked up. There you go.
All righty.